This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Mike Shope.
We had wrestling in gym. That was not a joy. I was probably the only... I held a book during rest. When it was my turn to write, I have a book out there. That's how into it I was.
And the Bulldog.
I know the human being... and fish can coexist peacefully.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Has that been proven yet, by the way? Has that been shown about fish?
I'm in the lake almost every day during the summer, and I got no issues with fish.
But it might not be mutual.
That's right. I mean,
coexist peacefully.
This guy again?
That was actually a real quote. From a president, which at one time would have seemed outlandish.
Right,
Welcome back. Mike Shope and the Bulldog here on WGR, joined now by Bill Barnwell of ESPN.com, who joins us via the WestHer hotline. Bill, Mike, and Chris here. Thanks for being on with us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I've been a fan of yours for a long time. This is our first conversation Bulldog has had you on. And if I may tell you, I strive to be you when it comes to Twitter. Because you just have like the perfect touch, I think, when you're, what is the term, Bulldog, quote tweeting or sub tweeting?
I'm not sure what you're referring to, but that is a term.
I think when you're doing that, it's going to be good. And there are lots of times when I want to do that, but I think it's not quite at the Barnwell level. So I will pull back. So, I mean, what kind of thought or strategy goes into this? For you
on Twitter?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know. You know, I think it's always just like I'm always intrigued by what people have to say because, you know, I certainly don't know everything. There's still a lot of people out there who do have insight. So, but I also find at the same time, I think I have an idea in my head of, you know, the range of opinions people might have about a sports topic. And it always shocks me when there's someone who just appears to have absolutely no idea what is happening. And those people seem to find me on Twitter more often than not, I suppose.
Yeah, that is probably consistent with almost everyone. Yeah, that's how it goes.
Do you when you're tweeting, do you think about maybe some certain person or group of people that might be reading it, or do you just not even worry about that?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I think it's just if we can have a little bit of fun with it. You know, I don't take Twitter super seriously, so I think if people have fun with it, you know, it's all in good fun, I suppose.
The only real filter I think I have, and this probably isn't the way to do it, because I should maybe consider, I don't know, like my family or potential employers for my children or where I work. But I generally think, does singer-songwriter Jason Isbell like this? Because he follows me, and I don't want to lose him. If I lose him as a follower, it will be the most devastating Twitter occurrence of my life.
How often do you check to make sure you haven't? Every day?
He tweets pretty regularly. So, no, I don't, not every
day. You just
day,
don't, you scroll over it?
Every now and then.
His name?
He was just in town, right. He was just in town at the beginning of July, if Canada counts. He was in Niagara Falls, Ontario. So I looked then. Like, is he still following me? Yeah, okay, good. All right, still got him.
All right.
Don't ostracize Jason Isbell. That's my Twitter rule.
Thank you, thank you, Bill, for indulging us in this part of the conversation. All right, so... NFL camps, I guess, officially are on with Denver reporting. The Bills, like most teams, are coming up. What's your general expectation for the Bills this year? It seems that they're betting line-wise where they almost always are, 7. Is there any reason in your mind to think it should be really different than that?
No, I think that's probably fair. I mean, this is obviously, I think, nationally an extremely underrated defense, second in DVOA last year, which is a very good measure of team performance. So a really impressive defense and an offense that you figure would take a step forward, given that we have, you know, a second year with Josh Allen, who, you know, I have to be honest, particularly high on, but I think there are certainly reasons to think that he could improve dramatically. You know, certainly athleticism is there. And the weapons and offensive line around him were dramatically improved what we saw a year ago. So you'd figure, hey, if the defense stays where it is and the offense does take a big step forward, that could be a playoff team in Buffalo.
How much credit, how much credence do you give the continuity point? Because he's here. Sam Darnold is of course the same draft class, but it's a new coach and a new system. Josh Rosen's already moved on. Mayfield's got a new head coach. It's Lamar Jackson's stable. The Bills have got Brian Daboll. They've
new
got the same head coach.
Baltimore.
Yeah, new coordinator. Okay, right. I'm wondering, how many points does that get them, you know, in your mind? Does that increase the chances, the likelihood of it working here because they've kept the thing intact for 2 years in a row?
A little. I think it depends on the quality of the coach. I think we're still sort of evaluating where Brian Daboll is actually going to land when it comes to his abilities as an offensive coordinator and play caller. I mean, you know, you think about Jared Goff, right? You know, even though continuity would have helped with Jeff Fisher and his staff in year two, you would have rather had Sean McVay than Jeff Fisher, and I think Rob Boris was the offensive coordinator there. But you get the idea. You know, I think it's more about, you know, given equal quality coaches, continuity is better, but I think that you'd rather get the better coach, even if it means moving on from a coordinator for the second season.
How about what happened here this offseason, Bill, at wide receiver, including how they made that move for Antonio Brown that was undermined by Brown? I feel like, and I can be critical of the Bills, but I feel like they did about the best that they could when augmenting that position, and they were coming from a pretty low place. But will it be meaningful is still the question, I think, here. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I like the moves they made this offseason on the whole. I thought they did a really good job of adding depth. You know, this is not going to be about one big guy. They didn't sign the, you know, Sammy Watkins or Allen Robinson because those guys weren't on the market the way they were the year before. Maybe, you know, Buffalo might not want to go after Sammy Watkins, understandably, but you get what I'm saying. There wasn't that sort of, you know, sort of $14, $15, $16 million a year player on the market. It was more just about, you know, a little bit of more depth. So they added players who I think fit what they should want to do on offense. John Brown is going to be, ideally when he's healthy, a downfield weapon for Josh Allen. That makes total sense as far as quarterback and receiver go. Cole Beasley is going to be a guy who's going to get some easier yards for Josh Allen, some safer throws, going to be a safety valve, which is what he was for Dak Prescott in Dallas. And I think, you know, this offense might come down to whether Robert Foster looks like the guy we saw during the final few weeks of 2018, where he looked like a possible breakout receiver for the Bills. So I think it's going to be, you know, there's upside in all those positions there. You know, at the same time, you could say John Brown really didn't play well the second half of the year once Lamar Jackson got in the lineup. Cole Beasley was someone the Cowboys were happy to move on from. Robert Foster was a guy who was a year ago undrafted, was not seen as a possible impact player in the NFL. So I think a lot of it's going to be about what that coaching staff can get out of those players who we've seen in the right situation for a stretch of time can look like pretty talented football players.
Something that I like, the way it all shook out here, and this is irrespective of the point about them going after Antonio Brown, which is, of course, right, an entirely different class of receiver, but I'm pretty bullish on Foster, Bill, and yeah. I think it would have been probably not smart to bank on him being their number one receiver. So you add guys, but they didn't exactly, you know, well, they didn't get Antonio Brown, so they didn't go out and sign a number one receiver. So they've kind of left the door open. Like, if he takes flight, I think they'll let him fly. If he doesn't, they've offset it with some insurance in Brown and Beasley and some other guys.
Yeah, and I think realistically, nothing they've done here, you know, locks them in at that position for the next 3 or 4 years, outside of maybe the Mitch Moore signing at center, where he's getting a pretty big deal. Pretty much everything else, you know, they can either move that guy to a bench or cut a player after a year and make a bigger investment if Robert Foster doesn't work out, if John Brown, you know, struggles to stay healthy, if Cole Beasley isn't the same guy he was in Dallas. They can move on from those guys, and they can go after a bigger fish in the years to come if that fish does become available. But like you said, you know, Robert Foster deserves an opportunity to see what he can do in a bigger role over the course of an entire season. And the moves they made this offseason give them depth, certainly, at a lot of positions, including receiver, but don't get in the way of a player like Robert Foster emerging as a really valuable, you know, wide receiver one, wide receiver two contributor for the Bills.
Back to fish, by the way, from the beginning of the segment. With Bill Barnwell of ESPN, Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR. I must have missed this. Bulldog mentioned this to me last hour, that you had a ranking of players by skill at skill positions, like by team,
yep,
and that you had the Bills above Arizona, because we were just talking about Arizona briefly. Is that right? And could you go into how you see, because I think like a lot of people, I'm kind of excited to see what Arizona is. So is that right, and how'd you get there?
Yeah, I think so. Look at what the Arizona Cardinals have on offense. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald's obviously, you know, a future Hall of Famer, but a guy who is, you know, in his late 30s or into mid-late 30s at this point. A lot of, you know, young players at receiver, but we don't know it necessarily. Christian Kirk, Akeem Butler, Andy Isabella, those guys are going to turn into. We're just not sure as of yet. David Johnson, obviously a very valuable weapon, but someone who, you know, really has 1 year of excellent production on his resume and 2 years where he was either injured or 3 years where he was either injured or a backup or not especially impressive. And I don't blame him for that. The offensive line was a disaster, but he didn't really transcend the mediocrity of that scheme and that offense last year. So I'm excited to see what Arizona has. I think the Bills are deeper at several key positions, especially actually at tight end, at running back. They're really deep at running back. They don't have that Larry Fitzgerald caliber option, obviously, and Christian Kirk is someone who I'm excited to see what happens with him this year, but I think the Bills are just, there's a lot more solid options up and down the lineup for the Bills when it comes to those skill position spots.
One thing the two teams have in common is a running back who gets paid, who has gotten paid in Johnson in Arizona and McCoy here. And that's a big topic right now, of course, in the league with Melvin Gordon threatening to sit out and even maybe Ezekiel Elliott. Bill, I feel like the book is almost closed on just how valuable the running back position is. I mean, I know that people are still debating it, and it's mostly, I think, ex-players who are sort of pushing back on this idea that, you know, running backs aren't important or something. What's right to you, and how do you see the future here?
Yeah, I don't see it getting better for running backs, especially as the league goes to a more pass-heavy attack. I think you're going to have to see, you know, backs who are versatile, guys who are like a Le'Veon Bell who catches the ball quite frequently. But I just think more and more teams are going to look at history and say, hey, well, when we hand out those contracts, how do they turn out? Do we see guys actually making, you know, delivering a return on value, or is it being not that exciting? And you look at the Todd Gurley deal. The Rams would get out of that deal tomorrow if they could, just because they're committed to a guy who has arthritis in his knee. Contracts for guys like Chris Johnson, D'Angelo Williams, Arian Foster, DeMarco Murray, Marshawn Lynch. I'm not sure that's actually was the one that kind of worked out, but those other contracts in free agency, either you had a guy who was impressive for a year and then kind of fizzled out. You had guys who struggled to stay healthy. You had guys who just stopped being productive. I mean, just it seems like you're more dependent on your offensive line and the quality of your offense as a whole than the running back sort of transcending. And you have occasional exceptions. That Adrian Peterson season comes to mind a few years ago, but that's one season over the course of the last 6 or 7 years. So I think those guys are going to get signed. I think they're too valuable to their teams to move on from. But I do think that we're entering a league where running backs are going to be one of the lower-paid positions on the offense.
I read a piece about Ezekiel Elliott at USA Today today, and I thought it was excellent. And one point it made about Elliott here in this context was he didn't really do very much split out. You know, you want to have a running back matter in the passing game and transcend this point. But I think, you know, maybe even Bell is an example, or I don't know how much Christian McCaffrey lines up outside or Barkley, but they're massive receptions numbers. Elliott's are good. Maybe that's a key piece here, is how they use the running back in the formation in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you see what the Patriots do on offense, I know that it's not necessarily the most exciting example for Bills fans, we're up the Patriots, but the Patriots have had a history of not really spending a lot of running backs. They signed Corey Dillon to an extension that didn't work out. They drafted Sony Michel in the first round, but they tend to rotate their backs, and they bring in guys relatively cheap, and the guys they do sign to extensions are your Kevin Fox and your James White, guys who are going to be catching passes out of the backfield and threatening teams in the receiving game. So what they want to rely on is just they want to have running backs who are good enough to run the ball but also good enough to split out and challenge your weakest position when it comes to your linebackers or your safeties. So I think you want to have players who don't make it obvious what you're going to do on offense from snap to snap. And look at Sean McCoy when he's healthy is one of those players for the Bills.
You mentioned the Patriots there, and we're totally fine talking about them, Bill. Appreciate the warning. But there's a lot of turnover there. Of course, Brady's still there and Belichick is still there. But on offense, I mean, Gronk is a huge loss, and you're talking about Benjamin Watson replacing him. And then, you know, the rest of the skill position guys, Hogan, Gordon, not that Gordon was like a staple or anything, but he was there. Even Cordarrelle Patterson, they've lost a lot of what they did last year. Is it just assumed that they'll find productive players to make it work because they scheme so well and their quarterback is so talented?
I think it'll be somewhere between those two. You know, I think they will drop off a bit. You look at the numbers for Tom Brady with and without Rob Gronkowski, there is a dramatic difference. You know, more than, I think, 15 points of passer rating over the course of the last 7 or 8 years. So there is going to be a drop-off, but there's going to be an adjustment period. I think they were preparing for this in years past. They drafted Sony Michel. They drafted Damian Harris this year at running back. They drafted N'Keal Harry in the first round. And those guys aren't necessarily going to be, you know, immediate difference makers, but I could see them being more of a, you know, a run-first attack this year and sort of taking some of the pressure off Tom Brady to throw the ball quite as frequently as it did in years past. And, you know, when they needed a big play in years past, they had to go to Gronk. And that was the guy who, you know, if it was fourth down and they needed a first down, they went to Gronk. And they just sort of threw it up there and figured Gronk would figure it out in the air and make a big play. And more often than not, he did. So I think at this point, they have to figure out who that guy is going to be for them, whether it's going to be Edelman, whether it's going to be Harry, whether it's going to be James White or Michelle, that guy who, when Tom Brady needs to make a big play, he has to go to and just sort of hope that he can win one-on-one. Because right now, I don't necessarily see that guy on the roster.
I did see a tweet from you about the 18-game proposal. And one thing you pointed out, which is, of course, right, is that the schedule, the calendar, from the beginning of the preseason to the Super Bowl, doesn't have to be really any longer, maybe 1 week at the most longer, if they were to adjust to that. I happen to love the idea that came out last week of the 16-game player limit. I think that's really fun because I want to see coaches squirm. I want to see how it plays out if actually a guy hasn't been hurt and we're overachieving this year, and now what do I do? I've got to sit him for two games or something.
Right.
Do you think that's realistic, and do you think that the 18-game season, one way or another, will eventually be a thing?
I like the idea of the 16-game limit. I think it's fascinating for the reasons you said. I don't think the NFL really expected to get a lot of buy-in from the media and from players and from the Players Association on that idea. But I think it's a way for them to sort of start the idea out and then have that as a negotiating ploy. So when the players reject the other 18-game proposal, they can come out and say, hey, we gave you this one idea, you said no. We gave you this other idea, you said no. You know, what are you going to give us to make this work? Because we've already tried to work with you on declining these options that we threw out there. It's just classic negotiation. I do think we are eventually going to have an 18-game schedule. I just have to figure out, you know, what the NFL is going to do in return. I could see a scenario where we get two preseason games, we get a 20-week regular season with an 18-game schedule and two byes, so you don't have to play as many games in a row as you do right now, hopefully, and then maybe a four-week postseason like we've had in years past, but with maybe no Super Bowl bye week in between the conference championships and the Super Bowl, which would make it, I think, about the same length, maybe one week longer, but I think it's the same length as the current schedule. So I could see that happening, but I don't know if it's going to happen in this next CBA. It might be for, you know, maybe 10 years down the line or so.
Mm-hmm. One more thing I have, if I might here. Are you as excited as we are? Actually, you know what? You don't know how excited probably we are for this.
I'll tweet about it. Maybe he'll read it.
We are the absolute least excited possible for pass interference replay reviews. We want nothing less than that. This continuing expansion of replay in just all sports. I know you tweet about VAR and soccer a lot, and we're right on top of that when you do. So I think I probably know where you are here on interference.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my colleague Dan Graziano tweets about this, how replay is setting the league back, how it's not making it a more fun experience. And the more he says it, the more I think about it, the more I'm inclined to agree. I mean, just, you know, I think we all want to have a scenario where that play from the NFC Championship game gets overturned. We all want that. What we don't want is replay, you know, every time it completes a big pass, that a coach is going to throw out a flag desperately trying to get a pass interference call. And I think, logically, we should be able to differentiate between those two. I don't have a lot of faith in the NFL being able to create a system that does not end up with us just, you know, looking frame by frame at possible tugs and possible grabs of jerseys for pass interference calls. And I don't think that's what anybody wants right now.
Yeah, the very fact that coaches have all along here been using their challenges to challenge ball spots just tells you that this is going to be, they are not going to only use it for obvious calls. Like they will use it tactically whenever they think that they have the slightest chance. The game's almost over. I guess I might as well use it. It's just going to be, I think, untenable is what I'm expecting.
I think it's going to make the game worse.
Yeah. So do I. I just don't want it at all. I just don't want any of it. I think your colleague there is correct. Just get rid of all of it. You know, in the CFL, did you see this back a few weeks ago? In the CFL, the commissioner wrote a letter asking coaches. The phrase was clear and obvious, and maybe other sports have used the same phrase. They don't want you to challenge a call unless you think it's clear and obvious. And come on, right? Like, what coach is going to have right. that? What coach is going to go along with that? I mean,
I thought it was clear and obvious.
Right. That's what you said.
It clearly and obviously impacted me, so therefore I'm throwing my flag. That's it. Like, that's clear and obvious.
Yeah.
Right. It's the league's job, not the coach's job. To get
right. Them. Right. Okay. Very good. Thanks a lot for this, Bill. I hope we talk again.
My pleasure, guys.
Bill Barnwell, at Bill Barnwell on Twitter, at of ESPN. Yeah, clear and obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Sean McDermott told us once on a Monday after a game, the game in Miami, where there was a play, I think maybe, was it Tannehill? Did they play Tannehill that day? Whoever it was. Remember the play where he was sacked near the end zone and it was almost a safety, but he got, like, they showed a replay from the goal line, and he did get out. Like, mm-hmm. he was just in front of the end zone. And McDermott said something like, I should know this quote, in fairness to him. I don't know it exactly, but I know he said something like how sometimes you use challenges to slow the game down or rest players or momentum, stuff like that, you know, for reasons other than, let alone clear and obvious.
Right.
Like, reasons other than, I'm certain mm-hmm. this call was wrong. I think he's 1-for-10. Or was at the time 1-for-10 on challenges.
Yeah.
You know, and if I were that, I might say something like that too, because, like, I'm not always trying to,
thinking.
I'm going to get a correction. I don't know. Like, all of it, I just think, is bad for the fans. That play, I remember thinking at that time, that play just did not need to be
reviewed. No, it did not. It did not appear to be that close. And it would sort of, that's why I think the explanation he offered, while I don't agree with it, at least establishes why you would do it, because if they have somebody upstairs watching that play, like we were all watching that play, that said you got to challenge that would blow my mind, because that person shouldn't
be doing
shouldn't have that job, like, just because it wasn't that close.
And we've had a lot of that with the Bills. Like, Rex had his problems,
right?
I remember a game in Kansas City with Rex and replay. Like, why should this be so hard? I mean, just get a kid up there who could see the difference. There should be kids who are capable of doing that, you know, pretty well. 803-0550 is the number. Superman the movie. Was that a movie you went to see at the theater?
No.
But you've seen it since, probably? Come on, Superman? Christopher Reeve?
Yeah, Margot Kidder. Gene Hackman's.
Marlon Brando.
I don't think I've ever seen it start to finish. It's possible I've seen every frame of it, but I have never sat down and said, okay, I'm watching Superman. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't. I think it probably came and went with my kids at some point in time where they were interested in it, but I've never sat down and actually, like, I'm watching this now.
I'd recommend it.
Okay. Well, noted.
What does that mean?
We got Netflix on the new Canadian TV, so I'll find.
I don't know
there.
If it's there.
Yeah.
I bought it. We rented it. My daughter and I on Saturday night. Yeah, we rented.
You can still do that. Like, from a place or, like, online?
No, from my TV.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay. Yeah.
All right. We rented it on Vudu.
Well, then it probably isn't on Netflix, because you would have probably looked there first before spending $4 or whatever.
It was $4.
To rent it.
Yeah, I like Superman, though.
That's what I'm always like that.
I'm curious about the cast. I want to, maybe I can find one, an oral history on how Superman the movie was cast. Marlon Brando. You got that guy. Glenn Ford. You've got, like, legends in the mm-hmm. in the cast. And then Hackman, who was, what, maybe in his prime?
Yeah, I'd say that. Tail end of prime, maybe.
Tail end?
Tail
1980?
Tail of prime. Yeah.
Is that, yeah, there you go. The French Connection is 71.
Right.
Then Hoosiers is much later.
Oh, that's right. I don't know. 80, it's that old,
what's
huh?
Gene Hackman's... Is it French Connection? What's Gene Hackman's first... What's his phony obit movie?
I think it's French Connection.
What's the first movie mentioned in his obituary someday?
I think that is the movie that established him as a movie star, a leading movie star. That's how I think of his career. Hoosiers might be more contemporary because it is, I'm going to say, newer.
Who's ever watched The French Connection?
Well, I have.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
But not Superman?
No. I like French Connection a lot. not just because of the hockey tie-in.
It was a Best Picture winner, I
yeah,
think.
There is no hockey Maybe? Tie-in. It's just the name of the movie is the name of the most famous Sabres line in history.
The movie was first.
The extent of the hockey tie-in.
The movie was first.
Yes.
All right, you think that's it? Barely. I think that might be right. There's a lot of good ones, though. I like No Way Out. You ever see that?
No Way Out. Is that Robin Wright Penn? Who's in No Way Out?
Kevin Costner.
Kevin Costner and Robin Wright Penn.
No, yeah. Sean Young.
Sean Young. Sorry. Yeah. Damn.
Sean Young, Kevin Costner.
I think I've confused those two women.
Gene Hackman.
For a long time.
Really?
Yes. I didn't even know he was in that.
Gene Hackman?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like the defense secretary of defense or something. He's sort of he's the bad guy.
Any respect here for the older version of the
Poseidon Adventure?
Yes. Yep.
Hunt for Red October is Gene Hackman, maybe? Is that a movie I saw, but I think...
No, Sean Connery.
Sean Connery.
What's the movie with almost the same name that's Gene Hackman from around the same... Never mind.
Okay.
Mississippi Burning?
Okay, yeah. Yes. That's with Willem Dafoe?
And Robin...
The co-lead, I think Robin Wright Penn.
I don't know.
Poseidon Adventure might be the very first... movie theater movie of my life.
Is OJ in that?
No. He's in Towering Inferno.
Okay.
Which could have been the second.
We are great at movies.
It could have been the second.
I love the mistakes.
I remember the Poseidon Adventure in the theater with my whole family.
Really?
Yes. There was a cinema, you know, the Clinton Rossler Plaza over there, right on the line, the city line in West Seneca. And Cheektowaga, there's like a liquor store and a Value Home Centers over there. There used to be a theater over there, the Value Cinemas. And we went to the Value Cinemas to see the Poseidon Adventure. I think it was there anyway.
Like 73?
Yeah.
Love us on movies.
If that doesn't line up, it could have been like the Holiday Showcase Theater or something.
The mistakes are great.
Yes, right.
It's like you talking about your taste in food when you're talking alone. The mistakes just add up. They're funny. I can't believe this guy's favorite food is cucumbers.
Oh, my God.
I can't believe it. Yeah. This is great.
Yeah.
I've tuned in. I'm lucky to be here right now listening to this show. What is this, the morning show? It's 5 minutes past when we were supposed to take a break.
And we've been talking about the Poseidon
Adventure. I don't know.
And Gene Hackman.
Sorry. Because they do that a lot. All right. So sports coming up in more ways than one. We will have Sal and Brian on. Sal Capaccio, Brian Koziol before we're done. Lines open now for you. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We just felt that with Joe coming in and be able to get him in a trade and where he is in his career and feel like he's in his prime, and at least we hope he is. And to be able to, a young guy like Drew, learn under him and be able to kind of solidify that position for a while. Obviously, we've been looking for one since Peyton retired. And so that's always a difficult position to fill, but finally feel pretty good about that position and where we are.
That is John Elway speaking on report day for the Denver Broncos. He is in charge of everything. I don't know. I don't even know what his president of football operations, John Elway. Talking about Joe Flacco, who they acquired in the offseason from Baltimore. And they also have Drew Lock, who they drafted in the second round?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay.
Gene Hackman, it has to be French Connection.
Yeah, okay.
Because that movie, while I didn't see it, that's really not a criterion for whether a movie is good or whether it's somebody's most famous work, whether I've seen it.
I would suggest you watch it. It is really good.
Well, it was critically acclaimed, and he's famous from it. You know how old he is?
I mean, it's funny. He's one of these guys. He's Hackman. I'm just going to talk about him like I know him. Hackman is one of these guys to me that's like, he is like he's like a 1970s hockey card. Like, he already looks like he's 45 in the French Connection. And there's no way that he's 45 in the French Connection, but he looks like he's 45. So I would guess he's 83.
He's 89,
oof,
and he was 41.
Okay, well.
In 1971. He was born in January of 1930 in California.
That explains why he looked like he was 40.
I know what you mean there. Like, he didn't really age too much. Maybe it was already balding or something.
Yeah.
He doesn't look too much older.
I guess I would tell you that I don't know what the hell he looks like as a 25-year-old man. Because the first time I think I ever saw him was in The French Connection. So
yeah.
I don't know what he did before that, but I don't. That's where I know who Gene Hackman is The French Connection. So he's already 40 by the time I know who he is.
That's right.
So that explains.
Maybe he got a late start.
Yeah, maybe.
Or maybe you just didn't see any movies before that.
Well, it's also possible. I was 6 when that movie came out. I did not go to the theater and see that. Well, it's possible my parents did. My dad likes Gene Hackman.
He's in, according to IMDb, he's in TV shows in the 60s. You know, that's kind of how you did it, right?
Work your way
Route
up.
Route 66.
Yeah.
You ever see that?
No.
The Invaders. He's in Bonnie and Clyde.
Okay.
He's in Ants. You ever see Ants?
Yes. The cartoon?
The movie, yeah, Ants.
Ants, so he's...
1998, he's the voice of Mandible.
Okay.
You know Ants, Joe? You know it well?
I've only seen it once. It's a poor man's Bug's Life. Why do I need
it's
to see it twice?
It's a poor man's Bug's Life. I love that. I love just taking obscure things and referring to them as a poor man's something. Ants. All right. So it's got to be French Connection. And by the way, when you, like... The original idea that we had and have used lots of times, but not recently, the Rosanna Arquette phony obit game is, I mean, I think maybe there was a time when it was reported she was dead and she wasn't dead, so we referred to that. And the game is, what's the first movie in the person's obituary going to be?
Right.
Another way of doing the same thing, or finding out an answer in a sense, is when you go to IMDb and type in the person... They'll, you know, be options. They're guessing who you're about to be typing in or whatever. And you type in Gene Hackman, and it says actor, The French Connection. Like, the movie that's listed is probably the answer.
That's a clue. Yeah, I think that's a clue.
So this is good in case we ever want to, like, find out or gamble on our picks for that.
Yeah.
We can go to whatever the movie that comes up.
Yeah.
Right there, when you type in the name, is the right answer.
I can't remember how that started with Rosanna Arquette. It definitely, there was a news item. And whether it was confusion about her demise or not, but it just caught my eye that I think they described her or referenced something that was not Desperately Seeking Susan, which is absolutely her answer. This is the movie she made with Madonna. This is the late 80s, I think, or maybe earlier than that, whatever. And it just struck me as, you can't, what do you, what? No, that's got to be this. And then we just went from there, and it turned into this whole thing we did with lots of people.
I don't even know who she is.
Rosanna Arquette?
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
I don't know who she is.
She was in Desperately Seeking Susan.
I'm told. I believe you.
She was also in...
Doesn't sound like something you would make up.
Yeah, I'll stop. She was also in... I'm going to be here for days here talking about...
Yeah, let's hear some more of her movies now that might or might not be right.
After Hours is definitely correct, and it's a very good movie.
All right.
But I'm done now.
Do you guys... Is the number zero, or is it a different number? What part of you wants Rob Gronkowski to play again?
Oh... No, it's zero.
Zero.
I definitely don't want him to play again.
All right, you're zero.
Yeah, no, I don't, no.
You want him to...
Yeah, I want him to just be done.
Be done?
I want him to wrestle or something, or whatever. Go on that Steph Curry golf show.
Holy moly.
But I don't...
I don't know if I see Gronk on Holy Moly.
I could definitely see him on Family Food Fight.
Fine, good, go. Get the whole family on there. It would go nuts.
Family Feud, you might see it. That might be a fit.
Yeah. No, I don't know, because I think he could show up in November and still be the most dangerous player on the field for the Patriots. And I don't want any part of that. No, I don't need them getting reinforcements.
All right, so it's about them.
Yeah. Yeah, and a little bit about him. Like, you know, look, we usually forget things about players who are great because it's convenient. And you can drive yourself crazy hanging on every negative thing, and some are more egregious than others. But the thing he did to Tre'Davious White 2 years ago still really bugs me, and it always will. I just thought it was really dirty and unnecessary, and it's shown a light on him that I don't like. I don't like what I see there.
It defines him for you.
Yeah. I mean, you kill us all the time. You're having a great day anyways, despite whatever you're saying he was doing that was illegal. And like the Patriots are going to complain about, you know, legal and illegal in football. And then you still got to, he's lying there on the ground. You got to like go the atomic elbow thing.
It was terrible. I don't want to say it wasn't. I can't say it defines him for me because I think that's just you snap sometimes. I mean, I think that a guy can be forgiven for mm-hmm. It's not like there was a lot of that with him, but that was a really bad moment.
Yeah.
And I mean, it happened in his hometown too. Like,
yeah.
There's a point you made about the dominance and everything. It's still just like you snap.
Yeah. Define him is strong. I mean, he's an all-time great player. So it doesn't define him, but it makes me not want to see him play anymore.
Okay.
I just like, no, you know what? You can be done now. I don't, you know, that was crap.
I'll come to like 20 or 25% because of the fantasy implications.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the strategy, like, do you draft him?
Oh, I might draft him. I'm just going to root for him not to play like right now. But if it comes to September 3rd and it makes sense for me, I might do it.
Yeah. But I don't know if I will, but I think if there's a possibility, well, this isn't the same question. The possibility that he will exists, and so some people are drafting him in early drafts, and you know, there will be some of that later if it doesn't go away. But I'd just like to have it for that, I guess. But, you know, it's still a small number. 803-0550. We'll talk more football. Sal Capaccio joins us at 5:30, and Brian Koziol at 6. I can't wait for Brian today. No, this is no reflection on Sal. I can't wait for Brian today because I want to get these golf picks out. Like, I put more time into it than ever. Probably a waste, but I'm in a good mood about that. 803-0550 is our number. This is WGR.
Bathing my memory and mind in the wetness of its soul.
We have a pair of tickets right now to go see this beauty of a living legend, along with a number of other people that are on the bill at the Outlaw Music Festival featuring Willie Nelson. The show is Sunday, September 8th at Darien Lake Amphitheater. He will 100% open the show with this song.
Is that right?
Yes.
Whiskey River is always first?
Yes.
Is that right?
If I'm wrong about that, somebody get at me and I will apologize 100 times over.
How many artists do that? Is it rare for somebody to always open with the same song?
I think it is.
Wonder why? You know why? It would be you'd have to have answered that over and over.
The like, great jam. It allows for the members of the band to all sort of show you immediately why they're there.
Open up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
nice.
Great, it's a great song. Darien Lake Amphitheater, Sunday, September 8th, Willie Nelson, it's Bonnie Raitt, Phil Lesh and Friends, and Alison Krauss.
The day of the Bills opener, or the night the Bill, of the Bills opener.
Right. Live Nation brings us this prize. General contest rules apply. You can still buy tickets at livenation.com.
You'll miss Pittsburgh, New England. Perfect.
Or win a pair right here. 644-9878, caller 5.
Will he play Me and Paul, since he's near Buffalo, and the song mentions Buffalo?
I would bet on it.
Really?
Yeah.
Love it. Doesn't he go through a lot of songs? A lot of his songs are pretty short. Willie Nelson. Yeah. Maybe in a concert, he just, you know,
he might run through a medley even. It's possible. I don't know. I've never seen Willie Nelson. My wife has seen him a few times.
How old is he? Mid-80s, you think?
Hackman,
young,
Hackman,
early 80s?
Yeah, no, like late 80s. Like he's,
Hackman
he's
territory?
He's Hackman age.
Hackman's
Willie
90
Nelson.
In January.
Willie Nelson, I'm going to guess, is that old or older?
No way is he older than 89. If he's, although I saw Tony Bennett, who was 90. I saw Tony Bennett when he was at UB. He was 90. He played like 29 songs or something.
Here comes Joe.
86.
Okay. Right. 86. Big difference.
Just beautiful.
86 is no 90. Everybody knows it. Big difference.
Oh, if I get to 86, I'll be like,
this feels like 90?
I can figure 90's out there.
I can't remember. Mike used to say,
am I going to make it to 90? I'm 86.
I'm over here at 79 going, what are you complaining about?
I can't count anymore, but I'm 86. 90's out there. I think it's only 4 years away.
Somebody listening right now is surprised you're not, or we're not already 86. 803-0550, back to sports after the update on WGR.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.